loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Casey Costello has been under fire for being the minister responsible for undoing the previous government's draconian and, some say nonsensical, tobacco control regime. She's also changed how heated tobacco products are taxed, reducing the excise tax to make these safer products cheaper for consumers. We have her on the show now to discuss all that and a little bit more. Welcome back to The Crunch, Casey Costello.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. You're a new minister now. I don't think we've spoken to you since you became a minister.
Yeah. I think we have had one chat since then. Yeah.
But you've been under fire a lot recently, particularly around tobacco. And that's what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about.
Yeah.
I had on the show about 3 weeks ago, Mari Wiglover, and she was talking about evidence-based tobacco control. And we got into this rather long discussion, and we're going to have another discussion because it was so long and in depth, about particularly around heated tobacco products. And she was telling me this amazing evidence that she's got from Japan and Korea around heated tobacco products. And the reason why they have heated tobacco products is a legal reason for it. And this is what got you into hot water with various different people in the media and public health advocates as well. So I'm interested to just explore a little bit on that. And if you've spoken to any of these public health activists, I call them, but advocates, around smoking cessation.
Yeah, I've had lots and lots of advice. I have met with lots of organisations, and particularly from the ministry themselves, there's loads of advice we've received. And I think one of the challenges that we've had in all of this discussion is we lost sight, and amongst all this noise, is that we're trying to get people to stop smoking.
Right. And, so this is the bottom line. You're trying to get people to stop smoking here.
Yeah. And I think all of this, you know, noise around what we should do and shouldn't do and evidence-based, and when you look at the statistics, if we'd sort of gone back and gone, okay, we're going to introduce vaping as a cessation tool, I would suggest all of the advocates would have said, no, you don't want to introduce another product. But in the last 3 years, we had 229,000 people quit smoking, and a third of them were Māori. And the biggest change that we had in recent years is vaping. And you look at all the statistics, how we've tracked. So we recognise that cessation tools beyond what was already being introduced through the quit smoking programs have helped. And therefore, as we track down this path of getting down to, you know, and all the statistics show, we are now dealing with the age group between 45 and 65 that are hardcore long-term addicted smokers. And everything we're doing at the moment is about looking at the tools or less harm products that can be used as a cessation tool. And that's what it is. It's a cessation tool. And we know, and no one can deny, that smoking is the highest harm tobacco product. And therefore, we're trying to get people to shift away from the highest harm to reduced harm product. And that's the discussions that we're having.
So you're seeing it as these products, including oral nicotine pouches, we'll get onto that a little bit later, but oral nicotine pouches and heated tobacco products and vaping as an interim to wean people off being addicted to the little white cancer sticks.
Yeah, as a cessation tool. And I think one of the challenges that we had in all of these discussions was while we were talking about anti-smoking, it kind of conflated into anti-nicotine.
Mm.
And we know nicotine is addicted, but we also know nicotine has some health properties, which is used in medical processes as well. So we have to balance the conversation. And when you're dealing with addiction, we're dealing with a pathway off that addiction. And that's the discussion. And I think what was difficult was that there was a whole bunch of noise in this space, which lost us the ability to have sensible conversations. So I've just spent the last week traveling the country, meeting with the quit smoking providers, the people at the front line dealing with the addicted smokers. And they're talking about people who have tried, you know, 20 plus times to quit. And so now we've got to look at what is the thing that we can get people to try one more time, you know, that those that are all whakamai and they just can't, you know, I'm ashamed, I've tried, I can't quit. I've tried all that before. What is the thing that would help them give it one more crack to quit? What is the program? What is the advertising? What is the marketing that will get those people to quit? And that's, and so when you speak to the frontline people actually dealing with the addicted smokers, it was really useful to understand what are the challenges, what are the tools they need, how can we help, all of those sort of things. And that's what we're dealing with at the moment.
Yeah, I live in an apartment building. You're not allowed to smoke in the apartment. And I'm a cigar smoker. And the reason why I'm a cigar smoker is because I had a stroke. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, my God, why would you start smoking cigars when you had a stroke? Well, when I was in the hospital, I researched how to, you know, I asked the doctors, the neurosurgeons, all the specialists, what causes a stroke? And they said, well, there's a combination of things, but high blood pressure, stress, and a lack of neuroplasticity. And I focused on the lack of neuroplasticity because I can remove stress, I can remove, you know, lower blood pressure, do all those things. But how do you increase neuroplasticity, your brain matter? So I started researching it while I was in the hospital, and I found that nicotine is the single most effective tool to increasing neuroplasticity. And I thought, well, I don't like smoking. Smoking's horrible. I hate cigarettes. They're awful. I didn't want to wear patches. I didn't want to chew gum. And you actually have to be a smoker in order to get those anyway. You can't just rock into a store and buy them.
Yeah.
But I can buy cigars. And you don't actually smoke cigars. You don't draw it into your lungs or anything like that. But the oral receptors in your mouth absorb the nicotine. And voila, and I put that down, the massively increasing my nicotine in my body is giving me the ability to heal and repair the damage from the stroke. But if I say that to anybody in this smoking cessation thing, they just like turn on me.
Mm.
They say, well, you know, oh, well, you're still in the thrall of big tobacco, or you're still addicted to nicotine. Nicotine's awful.
Yeah.
And it saved me.
Yeah, and that was part of the challenges we had in the conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm a practical person, and it was about what is the thing we need to do to get people away from cigarettes and start them on a journey off the cigarettes. And, you know, we've increased the prices. We've done everything, and they're still determined, you know. And I was talking to smokers, you know, they will give up food. They will give up heating in order to smoke. So this is an addiction, and we have to deal with it as an addiction. And that was part of the you know, looking at the methods. And the things that we undid, which was, you know, we've spoken about before, the things that we repealed were not in place. And yet we had achieved smoking rates in New Zealand of 6.8%. So we, you know, there's very few countries, yeah. And we never even got to celebrate that. You know, we were one of the lowest smoking rates in the world. You know, the UK is twice the smoking rate we are. Australia is about 10% or 12% now. Canada's nearly twice as much as us. The few countries, one of them being Sweden, which was lower than us, and that was the differential. What do they have that we don't have? What can we learn off countries that are doing better smoking rates than us? And that's the part of the reason about looking at other products that might help people to quit smoking.
Yeah, see, the heated tobacco products, Mari Glover explained that they couldn't introduce vaping into Japan because their law says that nicotine can only be contained in a naturally occurring substance, i.e. tobacco. So you can't introduce vaping that's got nicotine in it that would reduce harm and do all of that, which left them really with heated tobacco products. But the results in Japan and Korea are stunning, like more than 50% reduction in smokers in 3 years. That's huge.
Yeah.
And once you're off cigarettes and now you're onto something else, that's less harmful, then it makes it easier to go the next step and quit.
Yep.
Because, you know, one thing that I learned in having to rehabilitate myself is that if you've got learned behaviors over 20, 30 years, you can't stop those straight away.
Mm.
It takes time to unlearn those behaviors and learn new ones in between. So I look at this from a practical perspective. I don't like cigarettes. I don't like the health implications of those. Yeah, you know, we've had 30 or 40 years of increasing taxation. We're probably at the level now where Bhutan was, you know, when I went to a smoking cessation conference in Singapore and they were talking about Bhutan, don't do what Bhutan did. And everyone's around there nodding sagely and then we've followed their path. You know, they made tobacco so expensive it became attractive to the criminal classes to deal in.
And that's exactly the issue. You know, when we had all these announcements under the previous government, which were, you know, the smoke-free generation, well, the health survey that has been going since 2011, when that started, there was 119,000 15 to 24-year-old smoking. There's now 19,000. So we virtually have a smoke-free generation. By natural, it's just not attractive. Now, if you see a young smoker, putting vaping aside, if you see a young smoker, they're like a unicorn. It's like, are you serious? You're smoking? So we've already achieved the smoke-free generation. Then you go down the path of the reduced retailer. Now, the reduced retailer was going to do exactly the same as increasing the price, because if you're addicted, if you take away my local store, I will still drive the extra 50 kilometres or 75 kilometres to a store that sells it, or I will go to black market tobacco. And that's the part that frustrated me the most, is that we know the poorest that can least afford it are our most addicted smokers. Mm. And we were going to put another penalty on them by, instead of attacking the demand, we were going to attack the supply. And I was Minister of Customs. I saw the spike in tobacco, illegal tobacco imports. You know, we could see the black market was growing. You could see, I live in South Auckland, you could see where you could buy the, you know, they're selling individual cigarettes because people can't afford to buy the packet. You know, that's the type of reality that the real world was living in, not the world of soundbites. And so I was determined to shift things around and look at how do we reduce demand, and that's with dealing with the addiction and putting in the systems and the products and the options in place to enable people to quit and head down that pathway. And that was what all this noise, and looking at other products as, you know, because the smokers I spoke to, vaping wasn't working for them. Mm. They already have respiratory issues. They don't want to be sucking in. You know, this is the problem they were dealing with. So then what other options can we look at? And that was where we're continuing down that path now.
So if you're currently a smoker and you don't want to look at vaping, you probably don't also want to look at heated tobacco products.
Mm.
What does that leave you? Then currently there's patches and gum, isn't there?
Yeah, and there's a couple of different things. There's some, when I was talking to the quit smoking providers, there's a mist thing, and there's a couple of other products that aren't supplied in the quit smoking program. So they're funding them themselves. So we're looking at other products that are also on the market that may work. And then we look at, and that's the piece of work we're working on at the moment, is what other products, and that's where you look at the pouches and things like that. Mm. But if we're going to introduce something else into the market, we need to be very sure we've got a regulatory regime that actually works if we're going to introduce other products. And that was why it's going to take a little bit more time to look at how. But heated tobacco was already in the market. Like, we already had that in New Zealand. So that was, reducing the excise tax was a way of trying to create a price differential between cigarettes and heated tobacco in order to create some differential. And that's a trial for a year, and we'll look at what that does and whether the impact on pricing has been passed on and whether there's been an increased uptake in it. But that's something that was already in the market, so we could deal with that.
What about, and this is again something that Professor Glover raised with me, that some of these products, smoking cessation products, or alternatives to cigarette smoking, and we'll say that's heated tobacco because that's the only one in the market that is currently available, apart from vaping. But for vaping and for heated tobacco products, my understanding is you're not allowed to even advertise for those things.
Mm.
You're not allowed to say that this may help you get off cigarettes.
Yeah.
And so it's a kind of a, like a little secret. If you're really interested in doing something else, that you might start trying to seek alternatives to smoking, but you can't find any information on it because the makers of those products aren't allowed to advertise it. It seems counterproductive to me.
Yeah, and that was part of the discussion around meeting with the quit smoking providers and looking at what the process is, what are the triggers that help people work on, and this is part of how this regulatory regime, because even a store selling cigarettes can't say you could try vaping. You know, that's how restrictive it is. So those are the things that I really want to see in terms of what this regulatory regime looks like moving forward. Is what can we do that's a practical assistance to kind of get people away from smoking, and how we circulate that information, how we make the information available, is going to be a big part of that program of work.
And I imagine the same push is going to come if you look at introducing, the pouches or the oral nicotine pouches, things like Snooze and Zyn and
whatever
other brands there are out there. Those are the two I know the most of, mainly because, I use them.
Yeah. And that's, again, Sweden is already at 5.8%, so they're a percent lower than us in terms of smoking rates. And that's the one differential that we can see between their market and our market. And that's where, we want a balanced conversation around what, we're not saying these products are without harm. We're just saying on the spectrum of harm, they're much lower. And there's no denying that they're much lower in harm. And the objective has to be about getting people to quit smoking. And, the argument is, how much effort do you put in people who are that stubbornly committed to smoking? Well, that's, the cost to the health system is enormous. So the more we can get people to stop smoking, the better we are as a country. So it's worth the investment as far as I'm concerned. But it was really frustrating that all of these conversations, like I'm having with you, just didn't happen. It was just this, we conflated vaping in with the smoke-free and all of the noise around this. And it was frustrating because, just like you, I'm a practical person and about let's have some sensible conversations and look at what was the unintended consequence of what we were putting in place. And New Zealand needed more than, the soundbite smoke-free generation and the reduced retailer methodology was just, the frustrating part, which was really evident when we started looking at what was going on. So we didn't have an enforcement regime in place capable of dealing with enforcing 600 retailers and making sure no one else was doing it. We just didn't have the capacity. We actually won't be up to full strength until the end of this year in our enforcement team, the budgeted enforcement team. So all of the lack of enforcement and vaping and all of these things that were going on were what I inherited. And I could see we were having a big problem because we just didn't have the systems in place to deal with it. So the other part of the work is, what if we put in a regulatory regime over who can sell these products, where should that sit? Who should be making those decisions? Should that really sit with health, given that health's got a few other things to worry about, or should it sit with an enforcement regime like liquor licensing? Where would it sit? And that's the stuff that I'm wanting to make sure that if we do something around regulation, that it's enforceable, that the law makes sense, that it's manageable, and we don't end up, which is our current environment, where we're largely just fining 18-year-old shop assistants. We're not actually going after the business owner. We're not driving accountability. We're not revoking license to sell or anything like that. We're just, issuing fines to people that, really isn't going to make a shift in the difference. So that's the stuff we've got to work on moving forward.
Your other hat is customs minister, and you mentioned about illegal tobacco. Now, I might be slightly wrong on the percentages. My understanding, though, is Of all the containers that come into New Zealand, only about 7 to 9% get checked.
Yeah, it's slightly, yeah, it's not quite like that now. It used to be that, you know, containers were targeted based on a percentage of in, but now it's a lot more intel driven.
Yes.
We're actually intercepting a lot of stuff before it even comes to New Zealand. So we've got really good working relationships with overseas ports. So customs works really closely with them, and it's a lot more intel driven. So there's a lot more. So rather than targeting containers that we know don't represent or represent minimal risk, we go after the shipments that represent much higher risk from ports and trading lines that would represent greater risk to us. And I think the big thing is that actually that's the intelligence behind this has increased immensely through our strategies around intel and international cooperation. And, you know, I think full credit to customs in terms of the relationships they've built overseas that enable us to be a lot more scientific about what we're doing, which is, you know, good progress.
Yeah, when I went to that conference in Singapore in 2012, I spoke to a couple of Her Majesty's customs officers that were working in Singapore and Hong Kong, neither of which are British colonies anymore, but they were embedded in there to intercept or gather intelligence to stop it going to places like Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
Notwithstanding that, though, when I made a presentation to a select committee many years ago, and at that stage there were 750,000 smokers in New Zealand, so I think that's about 12 or 13 years ago that I did that.
Yeah.
It was easy to get illegal tobacco by the container load. You could make a phone call to somebody, as long as you fronted up with cash right there, they would deliver a container to wherever you wanted. And I said this to the select committee, and they didn't believe me.
Yeah.
I could have organized a 40-foot container of illegal cigarettes to be dropped at the place they were holding the select committee.
And that was really evident with and what we're now doing, because there's a lot more targeting, you can see they're being a lot smarter about, so, you know, the tobacco that's coming in now is being hidden and concealed in other packages and things like that. So it's not as blanket as that. So they're actually being a lot smarter. But we also get a lot coming through post and all those, you know, initiatives. And so there was a big increase in tobacco enforcement, you know, that increased the port presence by customs over the last few years, that's enabled a lot more targeted approach. So we are intercepting, and you can see that in the stats as to how much we're intercepting. And we were not naive enough to suggest that we'd get it all, because I know well, where these cigarettes are being sold, but that's the challenges that we've just got to keep pushing and pushing on it. So therefore, again, it's about attacking the demand. If we can reduce the demand, then, you know, all of these illegal markets go based upon, you know, they're out to make money. It doesn't matter what they make money off, whether it's drugs, whether it's tobacco, whatever, wherever they can generate income, they will do it. And so tobacco became one of the ones that was massive. And it was just when you highlighted that about, you know, the number of smokers now, we actually are down to 280,000 daily smokers in New Zealand now. So that's why we're really clear. So to achieve our 5%, we need 80,000 people to quit smoking, which sounds like a lot, but we had, you know, 229,000 over the last couple of years. So we know that we're on track to achieve those kind of numbers. And that figure was from June 2023. So, you know, between now and the end of 2025, you know, I'm very confident. But the challenge will be that we want that across all population groups, and we still have about 17% smoking rate for Māori. And so we've got a lot of work in that. That was, again, the conversation I was having, is that, you know, why put something blanket across the whole country when the whole country is virtually at 5%, when we need to target Māori and Pacifica? Don't we need to do something that's targeting those groups? And that was the point I was trying to make, is let's invest in whether effort needs to be committed at the highest needs.
You mentioned that everybody's making money, even on the illegal cigarettes. Everybody's making money. And even on legal cigarettes, everyone's making money, from the tobacco company to the retailer. The only person who's not making money is the end user. But the government's making money on that too. So if we have this drive to have smoking cessation completed smoke-free across the entire country, and that's, you know, acknowledged to be less than 5% of the population, that has knock-on fiscal issues for the government's coffers, because you'll hear people say, we're putting the taxes, excise taxes up to stop smoking. But the reality is that money doesn't go into entirely smoking cessation programs. It goes into the general fund, and it's in the order of $1.4 billion is the last number that I heard per annum. If you drop that even further, that's going to have a fiscal impost. Now, that's not a reason to not do it, but it is going to have a problem for forward planning. If we end up with a smoke-free country, essentially, we're now no longer going to get $1.4 billion worth of taxation that we can spend on other things.
Yeah, and that was the, you know, I mean, it's got to be recognised, but you also knock on effect that if we can attack that when we know how much smoking costs our health system and how much it costs, you know, from a crime perspective, all of those sort of things, if we can start pushing forward, then it's really hard to quantify, you know, supply and demand. But yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the beast. But the smoke-free target was introduced in 2011. Mm. So, you know, we've had 14 years of, you know, tracking downwards, and the country's coped with it.
Drop. 2011, I made that presentation to the select.
Yeah, that would have been,
It's about 750,000 smokers, and you're saying it's now 220-something smokers.
280,000 at the moment.
280,000. Well, that's more than a 50% drop.
Mm. Yeah. And that was what was so frustrating in all this noise. We were doing so well. And, you know, the frontline workers delivering quit smoking programs, you know, they got all lost in this noise. And that the other side of this is that we've also got, you know, the vaping, which, you know, we know it got away on us and we need to do controls, but we've got to simplify this out. We've got to get people to quit smoking. And I think it was the chief health officer in the UK said, you know, I think his quote was, if you smoke, vaping is less harmful. If you don't smoke, don't vape. Like, it's really simple. Like, just, you know, we're not trying to complicate things. And that was the conversation, is that vaping and smoking all got conflated in together. And so we've got this program work to deal with vaping.
There is a little bit of a moral panic over vaping as well. I mean, I don't find it particularly pleasant myself, but there's this uproar that, oh, kids are vaping. Well, they used to go on about kids smoking behind the bike sheds. Now, I know there's not many bike sheds left in New Zealand anymore because we've all become sooks and have to be driven to school. but it's not going to stop kids being kids. And if you know, when I was growing up, if something was illegal, you wanted it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm under 16. I can't buy cigarettes.
Yeah.
And well, I want some.
That's exactly it. And that was that conversation. And ASH, the anti-smoking group, they've been around for decades and they're very rational and calm. Yeah. So one of the things they're now doing, which is they do a year 10 survey, they've been doing it for years. That's 14 and 15-year-old students. So they do this annual survey about smoking and vaping rates, and that they're the ones that are saying, like, we're less than 1% young people vape. So, you know, we've 1% smoke, but we've now got this vaping issue. But what they're now they're digging in a bit further with this year's survey is actually trying to understand those kids that vape, how many are nicotine addicted, how many are actually just, it's the social thing to do, and how many are take it or leave it. Because the response to those is very different. Nicotine addiction is very, very different to how you deal with changing mindset and social pressure. So it's kind of like now we need to be a bit more, you know, evidence-based, scientific about, you know, and that was what your point exactly is, that, you know, you tell any young person no, well, you may as well, you know, cover it in glitter and sell it, you know, as lollies. You know, it's like, oh, wow, there's something new that I need to do because somebody said I can't do it. So we have to be really rational and practical about how we deal with these approaches. And I, you know, I had a lot of challenge in this space and, you know, vaping, you know, it's what are you going to do to stop my child vaping kind of conversation? Well, if you can't stop a child living in your house from vaping, I don't think the government can do much to stop your child from vaping. because, you know, that this is about, you know, a whole range of things. But, you know, the government has a role to play in making sure we've got good, sensible regulation and legislation in place around how we control these products.
You know, you could treat it as a food product, really.
Yeah.
You know, what we've got to make sure that what's in these products is safe, right? Nicotine is safe. Yes, it's addictive, but it is safe. Professor Glover was telling us about there was this perception that came about from some doctor saying something in the 1800s that 50 milligrams of nicotine would kill an elephant. And she says, it's not even true. It's not even remotely true, you know. But
yeah.
Some cigars have 50 milligrams of nicotine in them because they're big cigars. So it can't be true. But yet that was an urban myth that's propagated throughout the whole thing. So, you know, from my perspective, wanting to see rational legislation, sensible, you know, governance of these products, is I want to see sensible counter-arguments as well, not sloganeering or things that are fanciful or made up. And you know, this is the trouble I'm having. I can get you on the show to talk about this. I can get Professor Glover on the show to talk about this. I'm pretty sure I could bring any number of people in the industry and get them to talk about it. The people I can't get to talk to about this are the public health advocates, people like Janet Hoke, for example. I've asked her several times to come on the show saying, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about Japan and Korea because it's interesting. No, sorry, we won't talk.
Yeah.
But they'll put out press releases and they'll have the public health alliance put out things saying, you know, this is harmful, nicotine's awful, da 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 da, but they won't talk about it. And that's what I want people to talk about.
And that was, I mean, I just say that and sort of summing up the experience is that, you know, there was a lot of noise and I, you know, and I mean, even when I did the tour around the country, I you know, I showed the cartoons attacking me, but it was just noise. At the end of the day, what's important is the people actually delivering the services and the people who are actually trying to quit smoking and all the political rhetoric and, you know, it was just, I mean, it's just water off a duck's back. It's, I'm determined to meet the smoke-free target. It's an important thing to achieve, and how we do it is doing practical things and talking to sensible people about what needs to be done to make it happen. And that's kind of the journey we're on, really.
And that's a perfect note for us to finish this discussion.
Thanks very much, Ken. Thank you
for your time. I know you're busy. I know how busy ministers are, especially on important days, but it's been a pleasure talking to you. And I think we've got a bit more clarity on, you know, cut through the smoke. But yeah, you know, I've always been an advocate for bringing back smoke-filled rooms in politics. It's just,
and journalism as well.
Call me old-fashioned. But
take care, Kim. Thanks a lot.
Well, you heard her. All the criticism is water off a duck's back. I've talked with hundreds of politicians in my career, so it is truly refreshing to see a minister in command of her portfolios, standing by her convictions and implementing evidence-based policy rather than a raft of bumper sticker slogans. What do you think, though? Email inbox at realitycheck.radio or text to 2057.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox at realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.